Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Part 1. It's interesting how, if you take a classical tale and delve into its depths, peeling back the layers of embellishments and half-truths, you can often uncover the seeds from which the tale sprouted. These seeds, when examined, are often far darker and more complex than the sanitized stories passed down to the generations. The Pied Piper is no exception. What started as a whimsical fable to warn against broken promises hides a story that is far more unsettling. I've searched far and wide for the truth of it, not just out of curiosity, but because my own fate is inexplicably tied to it. Before I tell you why, let me tell you of Chen, the Piper. The Pied part came later. Long ago, there lived a boy named Chen in a small coastal village nestled at the edge of dark and ancient woods. He was the kind of boy who could disappear into the forest and return days later with berries, fish, and stories of strange, haunting songs carried on the wind. A dreamer, a wanderer, but one who loved fiercely. At 16, his world shattered when raiders came upon his village like a tempest. Fires roared into the night, screams of dying cut through the air, and by morning, Chell stood alone among the ashes. Everyone he had loved, his parents, Chell vowed revenge. Not just against the raiders, but against their leader, a man whose name was feared across the lands, Black-Eyed Fok. Fok wasn't just a raider, he was a monster in human form, a man who seemed to thrive on cruelty for its own sake. But Chell knew he could never face Fok in open combat. So, over weeks and months, he tracked Fok to his distant stronghold. By the time he arrived, his heart was a cold, hard thing. Fok had a family, a wife, 2 children. Chell believed if he could take them from Fok, he could make them feel the same searing agony that burned in his own soul. But Fok's family wasn't what Chell expected. His wife was no willing accomplice to his brutality. She had been taken from her own village years before and bore Fok's children under duress. The children, far from being the offspring of a tyrant, were gentle, wide-eyed innocents. None of this mattered to Chell in that moment. The rage blinded him. He set their home ablaze and ensured that no one escaped. It wasn't until days later, when he heard Fok laugh at the news, that Chell realized what he had done. Fok had cared nothing for them. His wife was a burden, his children an afterthought. The atrocity Chell had committed had brought Fok no pain. Instead, it had shattered Chell's own soul. He had become the very thing he despised. Racked with guilt, Chell stumbled into the wilderness and fell to his knees beneath the shadow of ancient trees. He offered up his life, begging for punishment. As the sun dipped below the horizon, the air grew cold, and he saw something emerge from the darkness. At first, he thought it was the devil himself come to claim his soul, but then came a light, a warm, piercing light that made the shadows recoil. A voice neither man nor beast spoke to him. It was no devil, nor was it truly God, but a messenger, an angel, perhaps, or something older, something beyond human comprehension. It told him his remorse had been seen. His heart still had a sliver of light within it, and that light could yet grow if he so chose. But redemption would not come easily. Chell was given a choice. He could surrender to the darkness and perish, or he could wander the earth, a vessel of both penance and purpose. He would never be able to directly interfere in the evils of men, but would instead be tasked with guiding them, nudging them away from the abyss. To aid him in this, the being gave him a gift, a set of pipes forged from no material of this world. The pipes carried melodies that could soothe the tormented, strike fear into the wicked, and bend the wills of those caught in the gray space between. And so, the piper was born. Centuries passed. Shell wandered from village to village, from kingdom to kingdom, his story becoming the stuff of whispered legend. Sometimes he was welcomed as a savior. Other times he was feared as a harbinger of doom. But always, his presence marked a crossroads for those he encountered. This brings us to Hamlin. The story you know is a child's bedtime tale, sanitized beyond recognition. The truth is far darker. Hamlin was a town plagued not just by rats, but by something deeper, an insidious rot in the souls of its people. The rats were only a symptom of their disease, driven by fear and desperation. The townsfolk turned to ancient practices, rituals that had not been spoken of for centuries. They built crude altars in the woods and invoked the name of Moloch, the ancient demon of fire, famine, and child sacrifice. The deal was simple. Moloch would rid the town of its plague, but in return, he demanded their children. The elders of Hamlin, those who should have protected their own, were the first to agree. It was easier to sacrifice the young than to face the harder truths of their failings. This was when the piper arrived. To the people of Hamlin, he seemed like an answer to their prayers. The mysterious figure with an aura of power appearing just as the sacrifice was to take place. But Chell had not come to save them from the rats. He had come to save their souls. He played his pipes, and the rats followed him, enticed by the melody. The town watched in awe as he led the creatures to the river, where they plunged into the depths and drowned. When he returned, the piper made his terms clear. The people of Hamlin were to abandon their worship of Moloch and turn their hearts to God. Only then would they be spared. Desperate, the townsfolk agreed. But promises made in fear are rarely kept. A year later, Chell returns to find Hamlin darker than ever. The altars to Moloch were no longer hidden in the woods. They stood openly in the village square. The people had not turned from the demon. They had embraced him, interpreting the piper's arrival as a sign of Moloch's blessing. Chell's blood boiled. He had given them a chance, and they had squandered it. He raised his pipes once more, but this time, the melody was not for the rats. The children of Hamlin, wide-eyed and innocent, heard the song first. They rose from their beds and wandered into the night, their small feet moving in rhythm with the haunting tune.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card. The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven.
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.
Villagers tried to follow, but the sound of the pipes sent waves of terror through them, freezing them in place. Chell led the children far beyond the village into the dark woods where no one dared tread. He would not harm them, but he would take them from Hamlin, sparing them from the town's impending fate. As for Hamlin itself, Chell left it to the demon they had chosen. Moloch came for his due. and in his wrath, the town was consumed. Fire rained from the sky, the earth split open, and the air filled with the screams of the damned. By dawn, there was no trace of Hamlin, only a scorched wasteland. Chell, the piper, disappeared once more, his burden heavier than ever. The tale of Hamlin spread, twisted by time and fear, into the children's story we know today. But the truth remains, buried beneath centuries of lies. And if you listen closely, in the dead of night, you might still hear the faint strains of his pipes on the wind. Now that brings us to the modern age. How do I know all this? What sent me on this obsessive, desperate quest to uncover the truth of the piper? It wasn't idle curiosity. It wasn't some fascination with folklore or old tales. No, it was personal. It was about Kiara. Kiara is my cousin. She's younger than me by a few years, but we were close growing up, more like siblings than anything else. She was wild, but kind, quick to laugh and quicker to anger. When she loved fiercely. When she hated, well, that's what brought us here, isn't it? It happened 2 years ago. Kiara had been dating this guy, Sean. On the surface, he seemed great, charming, funny, kind of guy who could light up a room. But there were cracks in the facade, things that didn't add up. He was a liar, plain and simple. And eventually, Kiara found out. Worse, she found out in the most brutal way possible. She walked in on him and another girl. A girl she knew. One she'd trusted. I can only imagine what she felt in that moment. The rage, the betrayal, the humiliation. But it wasn't just that. Something deeper broke in her. Something primal. She didn't just want to hurt them. She wanted to destroy them. That's when she told me time stopped. At first I didn't believe her. I mean, how could I? But the way she described it, the way she spoke about it, it wasn't like someone spinning a tale. It was the confession of someone haunted. She said she had been standing in that room, her hands shaking with rage, when everything froze. The air grew still, the world silent. Even the dust motes hanging in the sunlight stopped drifting. And then she noticed him. A young man, cloaked in black as deep as midnight, standing in the corner of the room. He hadn't been there before, but now he was impossible to ignore. His hair was unlike anything she'd ever seen, orange, but not garish, not fluorescent. It was the soft, ethereal orange of a sunset, warm and almost comforting. But his eyes were what struck her most. They were pure black, yet not empty. Tiny stars glimmered within them, like a window into someone's infinite cosmic void. And then there was the sound. He was holding pipes, small, simple carves from something that looked almost organic, like bone or ivory. When he brought them to his lips, the melody that spilled forth was unlike anything she'd ever heard. It wasn't music in the way we think of it. It was emotion given sound. Something that bypassed the ears and burrowed straight into the soul. She said the sound wasn't judgmental. It wasn't condemning her for what she was about to do. Instead, it was calm, even gentle. And when he spoke, his voice carried the same tone. He didn't tell her to stop. He didn't order her to see reason. Instead, he simply talked to her, laid out the truth of what she was about to do with a kind of painful frankness. He spoke about what would come after, not just the consequences, but the stain it would leave on her soul. He warned her that her rage, her hatred, would carve something into her that could never be erased. but Kiara didn't listen. When the world resumed, she didn't hesitate. Sean and the girl never stood a chance. She was brutal, efficient. By the time the police arrived, she was sitting in the corner of the room, her clothes soaked in blood. She's in prison now, life without parole. But that's not the punishment that haunts her. She told me that in the aftermath of the murders, as the adrenaline faded and reality set in, she heard the sound of pipes again. This time, it wasn't calm. It was mournful. Lament that followed her like a shadow. And since that night, she has not slept once without a nightmare. I didn't know what to make of her story at first. I wanted to dismiss it as a delusion, something her mind concocted to cope with what she'd done. But then, I started digging. I started noticing the patterns, the stories that popped up in old records and whispered folklore. Some of a mysterious figure who appeared at moments of great moral reckoning, always with the same black cloak, the same orange hair, the same unearthly eyes, and always with the pipes. That's what sent me on this quest, to understand what happens to Kiara, to understand who or what this piper really is. And the more I've uncovered, the more I've began to realize that the truth is far older, far more terrifying than anything I could have imagined. So I began digging. My search for answers led me to dark corners, to places where most people would never dare to tread. I scoured archives, pored over forgotten police records, and followed trails of whispers that seemed to dissolve into the void. What I found wasn't just folklore. It was real. Frighteningly, undeniably real. And it became clear to me that Kiara wasn't the only one who had met the Piper. After months of persistence and jumping through countless hoops, I managed to secure something I never thought possible. An interview with Gregory Mathers, one of the most infamous serial killers of the modern era, convicted of over a dozen murders, though the real number is likely much higher.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Higher. Mathers was a monster who didn't just kill. He destroyed. His victims were mutilated in ways that spoke to a deep, pathological hatred of humanity itself. Mathers wasn't the kind of man who granted interviews. He'd turn down journalists, criminologists, even filmmakers, desperate to make their careers on his story. Yet, for reasons I still can't explain, he agreed to speak with me. Maybe it was my persistence. Maybe it was the angle I pitched him. Or maybe it was something else. Something I still don't understand. When I walked into the interview room, the air was thick with something I can only describe as wrongness. Mathers sat shackled to the table, his once athletic frame now thin and gaunt from years in solitary confinement. His eyes, though, his eyes burned with a sharp, unsettling intensity. He looked at me as if he could see straight through to the core of my being. "You're not a journalist," he said, his voice low and gravelly. "What do you want?" I sat down across from him, trying to suppress the unease crawling up my spine. "I want to know about him, the Piper." Mathers froze. For the first time, the cold confidence in his eyes faltered. He leaned back in his chair, the chains around his wrists clinking softly. "So, you know about him," he said, almost to himself. Then he laughed, a hollow, mirthless sound. "Of course you do. He never leaves us alone, does he?"
"What happened?" I asked. "When did you meet him?"
Mathers stared at me for a long time before finally speaking.
"It was just before I got caught.
he said. My last victim, or what was supposed to be my last victim. A boy, 13, maybe 14. I had him in my basement, tied up. I was preparing him.
He paused, as if weighing whether to continue.
Then, time stopped.
The hair on the back of my neck stood on end. Mathers continued, his voice quieter now.
Everything froze. The lights, the air, even the kid. And then, I saw him. Just standing there, the edge of the room, like he'd always been there. Cloak, black as midnight, hair like a dying sunset. And those eyes. God, those eyes. They weren't human. They weren't anything. Just stars and darkness.
And the pipes? I asked. Mathers nodded.
He was playing them, softly. The sound, it wasn't music, not really. It was emotion. It made me feel everything I've tried to bury. Guilt, fear, anger. And then he stopped. He just stood there looking at me. And he said, "You don't have to do this."
I leaned forward. "What did you say?" Mathers laughed again, shaking his head.
"What do you think I said? I told him to go to hell. Told him it wasn't his place to judge me."
"Did he judge you?"
"No,"
Mathers said, his voice almost a whisper.
"That's the thing. He didn't judge me. He didn't scream at me or threaten me. He just talked. Told me what I was doing to myself. How every life I took was carving pieces out of my soul. Told me it wasn't too late to stop, to turn back."
"Did you listen?" Mathers looked at me with an expression I'll never forget. It wasn't anger or regret. It was something deeper, something raw.
"I wanted to,"
he admitted.
"For a long time, I really wanted to. But the thing about monsters like me, we don't stop. We can't. The rage, the hunger, it's all we are. So I ignored him, told him to leave me alone."
"What happened after that?"
Mathers' gaze dropped to the table.
"He looked at me for a long time. Then he said, 'I can't make you stop, but you'll see what happens if you don't.' And then he played his pipes again."
The room fell silent. For a moment, Mathers looked like he wasn't even there, like he was lost in the memory. Then he spoke, his voice trembling.
"When the world started moving again, I couldn't do it. The kid, I couldn't even look at him. It was like the music had burned something into my brain. I let him go, but it didn't matter. I was arrested the next day."
"And now?" I asked. "Do you still hear the pipes?"
Mathers' hands clenched into fists.
"Every night,"
he said, his voice breaking.
"Every goddamn night. I hear him in my dreams, pulling me back to what I've done. I see every face, feel every scream. He warned me. He tried to stop me, and I didn't listen. And now I'll never escape him."
I left the prison that day with more questions than answers. The Piper had come to Mathers, just as he had come to Kiara. He had tried to reason with them, to guide them away from the edge. And when they didn't listen, he didn't punish them. He let them punish themselves. But the consequences were always the same. The Piper doesn't just haunt the wicked. He leaves them to be consumed by the weight of their own darkness. And in the end,
That might be the most terrifying punishment of all. My obsession with the Piper consumed me. Days bled into nights as I scoured the internet, chasing faint whispers and fragments of forgotten lore. I read forums, obscure websites, and even conspiracy theory threads, anything that could offer me the slightest lead. It was on one of these late-night rabbit holes that I stumbled upon a blog post buried in the depths of the internet. The kind of page you'd swear would vanish the moment you refreshed. The post was written by someone named Evan Reed, and it was titled, "The Piper, A Second Chance I Didn't Deserve." Evan's writing wasn't polished, but it was heartfelt. He described an experience eerily similar to Kiara's. There was no time freeze in his story, but there was a man, cloaked with orange hair and those impossible star-filled eyes. Evan had met the Piper.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
On a dark night when he was on the verge of doing something unspeakable. The post was vague on the details of his crime, but I could read between the lines. He'd planned to kill someone. The Piper had stopped him, talked him down, and then, as Evan fled the scene, a bus had struck him. By all accounts, Evan should have died that night. Instead, he woke up in the hospital with only a few broken bones and a newfound resolve to change his life. Evan believed the Piper had brought him back, not just to spare him, but to give him a second chance to be better. What stood out to me the most wasn't just the story. It was the ending. Evan wrote that whenever he did something that truly made him proud, he would hear the faint sound of pipes on the wind. And every time he did, good fortune followed. The post ended with an email address for anyone who wanted to talk. I hesitated. Their reaching out felt dangerous, like I was teetering on the edge of something I couldn't pull back from. But I couldn't stop myself. I needed to know if Evan's story was real. Evan agreed to meet me. He wasn't at all what I expected. He was in his late 30s, clean-shaven, with kind eyes and a warm smile. He looked like the sort of man you'd see coaching Little League or working the grill at a neighborhood barbecue. But there was something in his posture, a slight hesitation in the way he moved, that hinted at a darker past. We met at a quiet coffee shop, and after exchanging pleasantries, I cut straight to the point. "Tell me about the Piper," I said. Evan's expression turned serious.
"I thought you'd ask about him."
He leaned back in his chair, staring out the window for a moment before speaking.
"I was about 10 years old. I was not a good person. I was angry all the time, blaming everyone else for my problems. My life felt like a constant spiral. And one night, I snapped."
He looked down at his coffee, swirling the cup absentmindedly.
"There was a man I worked with, Tony. He wasn't the reason my life fell apart, but he was a convenient target. I convinced myself it was his fault I'd lost my job, that my girlfriend, everything, and I decided he needed to pay for it."
Evan's voice grew quieter.
"I went to his house that night with a gun."
The coffee shop seemed to grow colder. I could feel the weight of his words pressing down on me. "What happened?" I asked.
"I was standing outside his house, about to go inside, when I saw him," Evan said. "The Piper. He didn't freeze time or anything. He just appeared. One second I was alone, and the next he was standing there, watching me."
Evan's gaze grew distant, as if he were reliving the memory.
"He had that cloak, that hair, those eyes. But it was the pipes that really stopped me. He played a melody that
cut straight through my rage, my grief, my self-pity. And when he stopped playing, he spoke.
What did he say? Evan smiled faintly.
He didn't tell me I was evil. He didn't call me a monster. He just asked, "Is this really what you want to be?"
I leaned forward, hanging on his every word.
He talked to me for what felt like hours,
Evan continued,
about the man I was and the man I could be. He didn't sugarcoat anything, didn't try to make it sound easy, but he made me see what I was about to do, really see it. And he told me something I'd never forgotten. The road back is harder than the road forward, but it's worth walking.
Evan fell silent for a moment, his fingers tightening around his coffee cup.
I don't know why I listened to him, but I did. I turned and ran. I was so focused on getting away from Tony's house that I didn't see the bus.
I swallowed hard. What happened? Evan shrugged, almost like he couldn't believe it himself.
It hit me hard. I should have been dead on the spot, but next thing I remember, I was waking up in a hospital bed. The doctors said it was a miracle I survived, let alone with just a broken leg and a few bruises.
You think the Piper saved you? I asked.
I don't think, Evan said firmly. I know. And I know why he did it. He didn't just spare me. He gave me a chance to make it right.
Evan's smile returned, softer this time.
I've spent the last 10 years trying to live up to that chance. I started volunteering, helping people who were struggling like I was. I'm not perfect, but I'm trying. And sometimes, when I do something that really makes me proud, I hear the pipes again. Just for a second, on the wind. And every time I do, something good happens. An opportunity, a bit of luck. Like he's letting me know I'm on the right path.
His words sent chills down my spine. Evan wasn't like Kiara or Mathers. He listened to the Piper. He had changed. And for that, he'd been rewarded. As we parted ways, I couldn't stop thinking about what he'd said. The Piper wasn't just a harbinger of punishment. He was a guide, offering a chance. A hard, narrow chance. But a chance, nonetheless. But for those who ignored him, like Kiara and Mathers, the consequences were devastating. I left that meeting with more determination than ever. The Piper was real, and somehow he was still out there, watching, playing, shaping the fates of those who crossed his path. The search continued, pulling me deeper into the lives of people most would prefer to forget existed. I wasn't chasing legends anymore. I was uncovering patterns, threads that wove together across centuries, tied to acts of unimaginable violence and the faint, fleeting presence of the Piper. It wasn't easy. There were people locked away for the rest of their lives, often isolated from the world, yet their stories shared echoes of something unbelievable. One name stood out early in my research. Derek Hale, an infamous spree killer from the early 2000s. Hale had been dubbed the Butcher of Bleakwood by the media, a man who killed with such unrelenting ferocity that even the most hardened detectives described his crime scenes as nightmarish. Over the course of 2 weeks, he took 15 lives, all seemingly random. His only connecting thread was the chaos he left behind, until his abrupt, almost anticlimactic capture. Hale's arrest baffled authorities. After slaughtering his way across state lines, he walked into a small-town police station, blood still on his hands, and confessed to everything. But the official records left out one crucial detail, one that I only found buried in an old transcript from his psychological evaluation. According to Hale, it wasn't guilt that drove him.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments. River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
To turn himself in, it was a man with a cloak and pipes who came to him on the night of his final murder. I needed to know more. I visited Hale at the maximum security facility where he was serving multiple life sentences. Meeting him was a stark contrast to meeting Evan Reed. While Evan exuded warmth and humanity, Hale was something else entirely. Evan, behind the reinforced glass at the visitation booth, he was unnerving. His sharp features and pale skin giving him a wolfish, predatory air. His eyes held no remorse, only a flicker of curiosity as I sat down.
You're not a cop, and you're not a shrink,
Hale said, his voice low and rasping.
So, what do you want?
I want to know about the Piper, I said. This got his attention. He tilted his head, studying me like a puzzle he couldn't quite figure out.
Interesting. Nobody's asked me about him before. Most people don't want to know what really happened.
Tell me, I said, trying to keep my voice steady. Hale leaned forward, his expression darkening.
It was after my last kill,
he said.
A woman. Her name was... I don't even remember. Isn't that sick? I took her life. I don't even remember her name. But I remember him.
He shifted in his chair, his chains clinking softly.
I was standing over her body, thinking about where I'd go next. Then everything just stopped. The blood dripping from my knife froze in midair. The sound of the city outside disappeared. And then I saw him.
Hale's eyes narrowed, his voice lowered to a whisper.
He wasn't human. You understand that, right? Whatever he is, it's not human. That cloak, that hair, those goddamn eyes, like staring into the void of space.
And the pipes, I prompted. Hale nodded.
Yeah, he played them. Just a few notes. It wasn't like music. It was like a hammer to the chest. All the rage, the power I'd felt, it drained out of me in an instant. It was just empty.
What did he say to you? Hale's lips twisted into a bitter smile.
He said I had a choice. Told me I could keep walking this road and see where it ended, or I could stop. Said I was standing on the edge of something I couldn't come back from.
What did you do?
I told him to go to hell,
he said, his voice dripping with venom.
I wasn't about to take advice from some freak playing a flute.
He laughed, a sharp, hollow sound.
But here's the thing. He didn't argue. He just looked at me, like he already knew how this was going to end. And then he played again. The room seemed to grow colder as Hale spoke. The music, it showed me things. My future, the bodies I'd pile up. The way it would end for me, alone, hunted, forgotten. It was like he carved it into my brain with sound. By the time he stopped playing, I couldn't breathe. I couldn't think.
And that's when you turned yourself in? Hale nodded slowly.
Not because I felt guilty. Not because I wanted redemption. Because I couldn't take it anymore. That music, it's still with me, you know. Every time I close my eyes, I hear it, reminding me of what I am.
From Hale, I moved on to others. Each story was different, but the Piper's presence remained the same. There was Lorena Vega, a nurse who had poisoned 7 patients at a hospital before the Piper confronted her in a supply room
playing a melody that brought her to her knees. She stopped killing that day, but was haunted by the music until her dying breath. There was Timothy Griggs, a quiet man in his 70s, who confessed to killing his wife decades earlier after hearing the Piper's song in a moment of drunken rage. Griggs had spent the rest of his life trying to atone, but he claims that the Piper's presence followed him, subtly nudging him toward paths of kindness and selflessness. And then there was Maura Hansen, a former cult leader who had planned a mass suicide. She described the Piper as both a savior and a tormentor, his music forcing her to confront every life she would have destroyed. She disbanded the cult the very next day, but spent the rest of her life in self-imposed isolation, terrified that she would never escape the Piper's gaze. The more stories I uncovered, the more the Piper's presence grew in my mind. He wasn't just a figure of myth or folklore. He was something larger, something ancient. He didn't force people to change. He showed them the truth of who they were and left the choice to them. But for those who ignored him, the consequences were undeniable. The music didn't punish them. It revealed the punishment they carried within themselves. The Piper was a mirror, reflecting the darkest parts of the soul and leaving them to face the weight of their own actions. And I couldn't help but wonder, was he watching me too? The Piper had become my life. At first, I convinced myself this was just research, a way to piece together what happens to Kiara and maybe help her find some kind of peace. But the deeper I dug, the more I realized that this wasn't just about her. It was about something much larger, something ancient and incomprehensible, moving quietly through the shadows of human history. I began to piece together the Piper's past from the fragments left behind, testimonies, obscure accounts, even scraps of forgotten literature. It wasn't easy. Most of what I found was buried in records that had been mislabeled, misplaced, or intentionally hidden. But slowly, a picture began to emerge. There was a 15th century trial transcript from Germany. The accused, a woman named Leslie Brandt, was burned at the stake for witchcraft. Her crime. She had claimed to have met a figure she described as Der Sternenblicker, the Stargazer. The description was unmistakable. Black eyes filled with starlight, a sunset hue in his hair. She said he had come to her during a moment of despair, where she was considering poisoning the family that had accused...
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
...of sorcery. According to her testimony, the Stargazer had played his pipes and shown her the weight of her actions. She had changed her mind, but had confessed her thoughts in a moment of guilt, only for the family to turn her over to the authorities. Then there was the journal of a French priest, Father Massu, who lived during the 18th century. His writing was filled with doubts about his faith, but one entry stood out. He described a meeting with a cloaked figure who played a haunting melody on pipes. The figure had spoken to him about the nature of forgiveness and justice, urging him to rethink his role as an inquisitor. Father Massu had resigned from his position soon after and dedicated the rest of his life to caring for the sick and destitute. Another account came from a dusty book I found in a university library, one that had long since been removed from circulation. It was a collection of old Appalachian folktales, including a story about the Wanderer of the Hollow Hills. The Wanderer, according to the story,
would appear to those standing at the edge of a terrible decision. His pipes could freeze time, and his voice carried the weight of truth. As I pieced together these stories, one thing became clear. The Piper wasn't a legend confined to Hamelin or even Europe. His presence stretched across centuries, cultures, and continents, always appearing at moments of moral reckoning. He was an enigma, a paradox, part redeemer, part tormentor. He didn't force change. He simply held up a mirror. But what haunted me most were the patterns I couldn't ignore. Again and again, his presence seemed tied to moments of darkness. It wasn't just individuals he visited. It was communities, towns, entire civilizations. And one name kept surfacing, whispered like a curse across the centuries. Moloch. Part 2. Moloch, the ancient god of child sacrifice. His name has been etched into history as a symbol of humanity's most twisted impulses. A piper had been there in Hamelin, trying to turn the townsfolk away from Moloch. He had failed, and now I couldn't shake the feeling that his struggle against that darkness wasn't over. The breakthrough came late one night as I scrolled through forums and subreddits I would never admit to visiting. Hidden among threads about conspiracy theories and obscure occult practices was a post that made my heart stop. It was a blurry photo of a flyer, one that looked hastily made and poorly printed. The text read, "The flame of Moloch burns eternal. Join us and see the truth." It listed a date, a time, and a location. A rundown warehouse in a forgotten corner of the city. I knew it was a risk, but I couldn't ignore it. If this cult truly worshipped Moloch, then there was a chance, however slim, that the Piper might appear. He had always opposed Moloch, always intervened when the god's influence grew too strong. If I could witness that confrontation, maybe I could finally understand him. I spent the next few days preparing, though I wasn't sure for what. I bought an old coat and scuffed up some boots to look inconspicuous. I even created a fake backstory in case anyone asked questions. But as the day approached, my confidence wavered. What was I really getting myself into? The warehouse was exactly what I expected. Cold, decrepit, and reeking of mildew. A dozen or so people were gathered inside, their faces obscured by hoods or masks. At the front of the room was a makeshift altar, adorned with crude carvings of fire and horns. The air was thick with tension, the kinds that made my stomach churn. No one spoke to me as I slipped inside and found a spot near the back. A man stepped forward, his voice booming as he welcomed us to the gathering. He spoke in vague, dramatic terms about awakening the ancient flame and shedding the chains of mortality. It was theatrical, almost laughable, until he began talking about a sacrifice. I froze. The words hit me like a punch to the gut. This wasn't just empty rhetoric. They were planning something real, something horrifying. I waited, my pulse racing, hoping, praying that the Piper would appear. This had to be the kind of moments that would draw him out, right? But as the ceremony continued, there was no sign of him. No pipes, no cloaked figure, nothing. And then it hit me. The Piper wasn't coming. He didn't respond to calls. He responded to choices. The realization left me cold. I was in over my head, standing among people who were willing to commit unspeakable acts, and I had no idea what to do. The Piper wouldn't save me. If I wanted to stop this, I would have to act on my own. But I didn't stop them. I told myself I was outnumbered, that intervening would only draw attention to myself and put me in danger. But deep down, I knew the truth. I was paralyzed. I stood there, still and silent, as the ritual began. The leader stepped forward, raising his arms theatrically as the gathered crowd formed a circle around the altar. The crude state of Moloch loomed over them all, its figure carved from jagged stone. It had the body of a man, but the head of a bull, its mouth wide as if mid-roar. The details were grotesque. Deep grooves from muscles, cracked horns that curved upward, and eyes blank, hollow recesses that seemed far too alive for lifeless stone. The air in the warehouse grew heavy, oppressive. The leader began chanting in a language I didn't recognize, his voice rising and falling in a strange, unsettling rhythm. The others joined in, their tones discordant, but oddly hypnotic. It felt wrong, like the sound itself was cutting into the fabric of the world. A few moments later, two members dragged a squealing pig into the center of the circle. The poor animal thrashed against its restraints, its terror palpable. I held my breath, praying to whatever force might listen that the sacrifice would end there, that this ritual wouldn't spiral into something even darker. The leader raised a long, curved blade high above his head, the metal glinting in the dim light. He shouted something incomprehensible, and with a swift, brutal motion, brought the blade down. The pig's cries cut off instantly, replaced by the sickening thud of its body hitting the altar. Blood spilled across the stone, pooling around the base of the statue. The chanting stopped, leaving an eerie silence in its wake for a moment.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Nothing happened. The leader lowered his blade, breathing heavily as he scans the room. The others looked on in anticipation, their eyes fixed on the altar as if expecting something to emerge from the shadows. And then I saw it. The statue's eyes, those hollow, lifeless sockets, seemed to ignite. It wasn't fire, not exactly, but a dim, burning light that flickered deep within the stone. It was faint, almost imperceptible, but I felt it more than I saw it. It locked onto me, piercing through my body, my mind, my soul. I couldn't move, couldn't breathe. It was as if the statue was looking into me, peeling away every layer, exposing every fear and every failure. The cold dread that washed over me was unlike anything I'd ever felt before. It was the kind of fear that seeps into your bones and stays there, whispering that you're nothing, that you're powerless. The leader must have noticed the change in the statue, because he dropped to his knees, arms outstretched. His voice trembled with ecstatic fervor.
"Moloch has heard us,"
he shouted.
"The flame burns eternal."
The others followed suit, dropping to their knees in unison. But I couldn't. I was frozen, locked in place by those burning, unblinking eyes. Nothing else happened. The light in the statue's eyes faded after a few moments, leaving it as inert as it had been before. The leader, clearly disappointed, but masking it with grandiose proclamations, declared the ritual a success. The crowd murmured their agreement, though I could hear the uncertainty in their voices. As they dispersed, I stayed behind, unable to shake the feeling that the statue was still watching me, even as its eyes were turned to lifeless stone. That night, I couldn't sleep. The image of the statue haunted me. Its hollow gaze burned into my memory, and the cold dread, the sense that something far beyond my understanding had been present in that warehouse, clung to me like a shadow. Nothing had happened.
No supernatural event, no divine retribution, no Piper. But the fear gnawed at me all the same. The Piper might not have shown himself, but I felt certain of one thing. Whatever had been summoned, or almost summoned, was real. And it was watching. That night in my apartment was the longest night of my life. It began with the silence, the kind that isn't really silence, but the absence of anything familiar. No hum of the refrigerator, no distant chatter from the neighbors. Even the city outside my window seems to hold its breath. The world felt still, wrong, like the space between heartbeats. I told myself I was imagining things, that my nerves were shot after the ritual, that the oppressive air in the warehouse had gotten to me. But no matter how many times I turned the TV on, turned it off, paced the room, or stared at my phone, the silence crept back in, stretching thinner and thinner, like something waiting to snap. The shadows were different, too. I noticed it first in the corners of the room, where the light from my lamps should have cut through the dark. Instead, it seems to pool there, deep and impenetrable, as if it wasn't just the absence of light, but the presence of something else. My apartment, my sanctuary, felt foreign. Every sound was magnified. The creak of the old radiator rattled through the room like a gunshot. A loose floorboard groaned under my step, and I froze, heart hammering as if something might groan back. Even my own breathing felt too loud, echoing in my chest like a drumbeat. I couldn't sit still. I tried to work, flipping through my notes and transcripts, but the words swam on the page. I tried to distract myself with a movie, but every flicker of movement in my peripheral vision sent my pulse racing. Was that shadow always there? Did I just see something shift? I checked the locks 3 times. On the front door, the windows, even the bathroom. I turned the lights on in every room, then turned them off again when the brightness felt too exposed, too vulnerable. Nothing felt safe. And then, there was the statue. It wasn't here, of course, not physically. But I couldn't stop seeing it in my mind. The jagged stone, the grotesque horns, and those eyes. God, those eyes. I could still feel their gaze crawling over me, cold and unrelenting, like I'd been marked. I turned the radio on to drown out the silence, letting the static wash over me like a shield. But that only made it worse. The hiss of white noise filled the apartment, twisting into strange patterns, rising and falling like distant whispers. I leaned closer, straining to make sense of it, only to realize I didn't want to know what it was saying. Midnight came and went. The shadows seemed to grow darker, pressing closer, filling the spaces where the light didn't quite reach. I felt stupid, paranoid, but I couldn't shake the feeling that I wasn't alone. I kept glancing over my shoulder, expecting something. A figure, a sound, a flicker of movement. But there was nothing. Just the silence and the shadows stretching endlessly. By 2 a.m., I'd given up trying to sleep. My bed felt too small, too exposed, like a stage in the middle of a vast, empty room. I sat on the couch instead, staring at the blank TV screen. I could see my reflection in the dark glass, pale, wide-eyed, disheveled. Behind me, the room stretched out in warped shadows, the edges of the reflection curling into something unrecognizable. A knock at the door would have been a relief. A creak of the floorboards, a voice, anything would have been better than the oppressive nothingness pressing in on all sides. But nothing came. The hours dragged on, every second slower than the last. By the time the first gray light of dawn filtered through the blinds, I felt hollowed out, like the night had scooped something vital out of me and left a shell in its place. Nothing had happened. Nothing overt. Nothing concrete. But that was almost worse. Because whatever was out there, whatever I had glimpsed in that warehouse, didn't need to step into the light. It didn't need to show itself.
It was already here, in the air, in the silence, in the cold, crawling dread that still clung to me like a second skin. I wasn't alone. I didn't know how I knew, but I did. Something was watching, waiting, patient. As the first rays of sunlight crept into the room, I wasn't sure.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Or it was relief or resignation that finally made me close my eyes. The days that followed the ritual were hell. I couldn't shake the feeling of the statue's eyes burning into me. Couldn't shake the crushing weight of dread that had settled deep in my chest. It clung to me, followed me everywhere. Through the streets, to the coffee shop, even in the shower. I couldn't sleep, not even for a moment. Every time I closed my eyes, I saw the jagged stone, the horns, and the faint flickering light in its eyes. I threw myself into research, desperate for answers. I started reading everything I could find about Moloch. The name appeared across cultures, whispered in different forms, but always tied to the same thing. Blood, fire, sacrifice. It wasn't just ancient mythology. Moloch had been invoked throughout history, his presence tied to moments of unthinkable cruelty. Wars, massacres, and rituals hidden from the public eye. The more I read, the worse it got. The stories spoke of those who called upon Moloch not out of devotion, but out of desperation. People who would give anything to gain power, escape ruin, or satisfy their darkest desires. And every time, the cost was the same. Lives, innocence, children. I didn't realize how much time had passed until I glanced at the clock on the fourth night and saw it was nearly 2 a.m. The apartment was silent, save for the faint hum of my desk lamp. The shadows seemed thicker than usual, pressing in at the edges of the room like they were waiting for me to turn my back. I shook my head, rubbing my eyes. I told myself I was imagining things. I was just tired, sleep-deprived. But then, I heard it. Footsteps. They came from the hallway outside my apartment, a slow, deliberate tread that sent a chill crawling up my spine. I froze, staring at the door, waiting for the sounds to pass, but it didn't. The footsteps stopped right outside my door. The silence stretched, suffocating. My heart pounded in my chest as I crept toward the door, peering through the peephole. The hallway was empty. I stood there for a long moment, my breath shallow, before finally stepping back. "Get a grip," I muttered to myself, but the words felt hollow, like a lie I couldn't quite believe. I turned back to my desk, and that's when I heard the first slam. It came from the kitchen, a sharp, violent crack that echoed through the apartment. I spun around, heart hammering in my chest. The cabinet doors were wide open, the contents scattered across the counter and floor. Another slam, this time from the bathroom. I darted to the doorway, flipping the light switch. The shower curtain was drawn closed, though I knew I'd left it open. My hand trembled as I reached for it, yanking it back. The tap was empty. The sound of footsteps started again, heavier this time, echoing from the living room. I stepped out into the hallway, every nerve in my body on edge.
"Hello?"
I called out, my voice cracking. Nothing. I stepped into the living room and froze. Through the window, I saw a figure standing in the shadows just beyond the glass. It was barely illuminated by the faint light from a distant street lamp, but I could make out the shape. A tall, broad figure cloaked in darkness, its face obscured. It didn't move. It just stood there, staring. I felt frozen, every muscle locked in place. And then, as if it realized it had seen me, the figure turned and fled, disappearing into the shadows. I stumbled back, my legs nearly giving out beneath me. I locked the window, drew the curtains, and leaned against the wall, my breath coming in ragged gasps. I turned to leave the room and caught movement in the corner of my eye, the mirror above the fireplace. I didn't want to look. Every instinct screamed at me to run, to leave the apartment and never come back, but I forced myself to turn. At first, the reflection showed only me, pale, trembling, staring into my own terrified eyes. But then, something shifted behind me. A flicker of movement in the shadows. I whipped around. The room was empty. When I turned back to the mirror, the movement was gone. But the reflection wasn't quite right. The shadows seemed deeper, darker, almost alive. I didn't sleep that night. I couldn't. I sat in the corner of the room, my back to the wall, clutching the only weapon I could find. A kitchen knife. The apartment was silent, but the sense of being watched never left. By dawn, I wasn't sure if the fear I felt was mine, or if something else had planted it there. The morning brought no relief. The sunlight that streamed through the curtains felt pale and distant, like a cruel parody of comfort. My body ached from sitting on the floor all night, and my mind was fogged with exhaustion. But I was alive, and for now, the oppressive dread seemed to have loosened its grip. I stumbled into the bathroom, desperate to wash the night away, even if only for a moment. The cold water on my face helped a little, numbing the terror that still lingered at the edges of my thoughts. As I stared up and looked into the mirror, my reflection stared back, hollow-eyed and haggard. I let out a shaky breath and turned away to grab a towel. When I looked back, my reflection was no longer mine. It moved faster than I did, standing completely still while I recoiled. My breath caught in my throat. My reflection wasn't me. It was staring directly into my eyes. Its expression unreadable, its gaze sharp and knowing. Then it smiled. I stumbled back, my heart hammering in my chest, but the reflection didn't move. It stayed in the mirror, locked in that eerie, unblinking grin. And then it spoke. "You're so tired, Glenn." The voice was mine, but it wasn't. It was softer, calmer, with an edge of something sinister curling around the edges of the words. "You've seen it, haven't you?" The reflection continued. "The truth. You felt it watching. You know what it wants." My legs felt weak, but I forced myself to speak.
"What the hell are you?"
It tilted its head, almost playfully.
"I'm you, or maybe I'm not. Doesn't matter. You're standing on the edge, Clem, and you can feel it. The only question is whether you're going to fall or jump."
"Leave me alone," I whispered, gripping the edge of the sink so tightly my knuckles turned white.
"Leave you alone,"
the reflection chuckled, a dry, hollow sound.
"That's not how this works. You opened the door, Glenn. You saw the eyes. It saw you."
I shook my head, squeezing my eyes shut, but I could still hear it. My own voice, relentless and invasive.
"There's only one way to end this," it said,
its tone dropping to a low, conspiratorial whisper.
You need to find him.
Find who?
I snapped, my voice cracking.
The leader,
the reflection said, its grin widening.
The one who led the ritual. The one who called Moloch's name. You know where to find him.
I'm not.
You will.
It interrupted, the grin vanishing in an instant. Its face was suddenly cold, stern.
You'll find him. You'll bring him to Moloch. Offer him. You'll feel the peace you've been chasing ever since you stepped into that warehouse. You'll finally be free.
I stared at the mirror, my chest heaving.
No, I'm not doing that. I'm not a murderer.
The reflection didn't smile this time. It simply stared at me with those unblinking eyes, its face unreadable.
You're already marked,
it said softly.
You're already his. The only way to stop the screaming is to listen.
And then, it was gone. My own reflection stared back at me, pale and shaking, but otherwise normal. The bathroom was silent, save for the faint drip of the faucet. I stumbled out of the room, my hands trembling as I gripped the edge of the kitchen counter to steady myself. The reflection's words echoed in my mind, relentless and inescapable.
You'll find peace. You'll finally be free.
I didn't want to believe it. I didn't want to even consider it. But deep down in the part of me that had been twisted and hollowed out by fear, a tiny, treacherous thought began to take root. What if it was right? The days that followed were a haze of resistance and desperation. I fought against the words that echoed in my mind, the image of my own reflection speaking those terrible things to me. I told myself it wasn't real. I was sleep-deprived, paranoid, imagining things. But no matter how much I tried to rationalize it, the cold truth lingered at the edge of my thoughts. I tried everything to distract myself. I threw myself back into my research, combing through every book, every forum, every scrap of information about Moloch, but it only made things worse. The stories I found spoke of those who tried to resist the gods' influence. They always failed. At night, the dread returned. The shadows seemed darker, the silence heavier. The apartment felt alive, as though something unseen was watching, waiting for me to break. The strange occurrences continued, doors creaking open when I knew I had closed them. Faint footsteps in the hallway, glimpses of movement in the corner of my eye. The worst were the mirrors. I couldn't look at them anymore. Every time I passed one, I felt its pull, like it was calling out to me, daring me to look again. I covered them with sheets, but it didn't help. The reflection's voice still haunted me.
You know what you need to do. You'll find peace. You can't fight him.
I refused to give in. I told myself I was stronger than this, that I wouldn't become a pawn in whatever twisted game I'd stumbled into. But my resolve was hollow. The fear gnawed at me, consuming every waking thought. I didn't sleep. I didn't eat. The walls of my apartment closed in, suffocating. I couldn't stay there anymore, but the thought of going outside, of facing the world, felt just as unbearable. On the fifth night, I finally broke. It was almost midnight when I left the apartment. The city felt alien, the streets empty and lifeless. Even the distant hum of traffic seemed muted, swallowed by the oppressive quiet. I didn't know exactly why I was heading back to the warehouse. Maybe it was desperation, a need to confront whatever had been set in motion that night, or maybe it was something worse, an invisible pull guiding me back to the statue.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
The warehouse loomed ahead, dark and silent, its broken windows like empty, staring eyes. I hesitated at the door, my breath visible in the cold night air. For a moment, I considered turning back. But then, I heard it. A faint, almost imperceptible sound, like a whisper carried on the wind. I couldn't make out the words, but the tone was clear, urgent, commanding. I stepped inside. The air was cold and stale, the kind of cold that sinks into your bones and stays there. My footsteps echoed as I made my way across the empty floor, each step feeling heavier than the last. The statue was still there, standing in the center of the room like a sentinel. The grotesque form seemed larger than I remembered, its jagged features more menacing. The horns, the open mouth, the carved musculature. It was monstrous, but it was the eyes that drew me in. They were empty, lifeless holes, yet they seemed to see me, to follow my every move. I felt their weight pressing down on me, cold and suffocating. I stopped a few feet away, my heart pounding. I didn't know what I expected to happen. Maybe I thought the reflection's voice would return, or that the statue would spring to life. But the room was silent, save for the sound of my own ragged breathing. And yet, the dread didn't fade. If anything, it grew stronger, coiling around me like a vice. "What do you want from me?" I whispered, my voice trembling. The statue didn't move, didn't respond, but the air felt heavier, as though the room itself was listening. I stepped closer, my legs shaking.
"Is this what you wanted? For me to come here? For me to..."
I couldn't finish the sentence. The weight of the words was too much. And then, as I stood there staring into those empty eyes, I felt it. A presence. Not physical. Not visible. But undeniable. It was there. All around me, filling the space with an overwhelming sense of power and malice. I fell to my knees, my breath hitching in my throat. The cold dread that had followed me for days was nothing compared to this. It was like staring into the abyss and feeling it stare back, ancient and hungry. For the first time since this nightmare began, I realized how small I was, how powerless, and yet I couldn't bring myself to leave. The reflection's voice echoed in my mind, soft and insidious. "You'll find peace." I didn't believe it, but I couldn't help wondering if it was right. As I knelt there, the crushing weight of the statue's presence pressed down on me. I heard footsteps, slow, deliberate, echoing through the warehouse. I turned, my body stiff with dread, and saw the ritual leader step out of the shadows. He looked different without the theatrics of the ceremony. No hood, no dramatic gestures. Just a man, plain and unremarkable. Yet his eyes held something unnatural. They gleamed with the kind of certainty that comes only from absolute belief. And in that moment, I hated him.
"Why are you here?"
he asked, his voice calm, almost conversational. The rage hit me like a tidal wave, sudden and overwhelming. I surged to my feet, my fists clenched so tightly my nails bit into my palms.
"What do you want from me?"
I shouted. My voice echoed off the walls, wild and raw.
"What the hell did you summon that night?" What is this thing that's been watching me, haunting me?
He didn't flinch. If anything, he seemed amused. His lips curled into a faint smile.
You felt it, didn't you? His gaze, his power.
He stepped closer, his presence suffocating.
Moloch sees you now. You've been touched by him. There's no turning back.
Shut up! I snapped, my voice cracking.
You don't know what you're talking about. You think this is some kind of gift? It's not. It's a curse. And yet you come here,
he said, his tone maddeningly calm.
Why? Because you know what you need to do. You've seen the truth. You've heard it, haven't you?
A little whisper in your mind, telling you the way out.
He knew. Somehow, he knew about the reflection, about the voice.
My fists trembled, and I wanted to hit him, to wipe that smug look off his face. But I couldn't move.
You think you're special,
he continued, circling me like a predator.
You think you can defy him? You're nothing, Glenn. Just another pawn in the grand design. The only choice you have is how you play your part. Will you stand in defiance and be broken? Or will you submit and find peace?
I couldn't take it anymore.
How do you know my name? I didn't ask for this.
I roared.
I don't care about your god, your rituals, your twisted faith. I just want my life back.
The tension in the room was unbearable, suffocating. My chest heaved, my vision blurred with tears of frustration and exhaustion, and in that moment, I did something I hadn't done in years.
I prayed. I prayed for the Piper. I begged, silently and desperately, for him to appear, to play his pipes, to save me from this nightmare.
I prayed for the haunting weight of my chest to lift, for the unrelenting eyes to look away, for this man, this monster, to be silenced. But he never came. The warehouse remained silent. The only sounds the leader's steady breathing and my own ragged gasps. The realization hit me like a punch to the gut. No one was coming to save me. The leader saw the defeat in my eyes and stepped closer, his voice softening into something almost gentle.
You can end this, Glenn. You don't have to keep suffering. All it takes is one act, one offering. You know who I am. You know what needs to be done. Moloch will accept it. Then you'll finally be free.
I stared at him, my mind racing. It would be so easy. One moment of violence, and it would all be over. The haunting, the fear, the suffocating dread, it would stop. I took a step forward, my fists trembling at my side. The leader didn't move, didn't resist. He just stood there, his expression serene, as though he had already won. But then, at the breaking point, something inside me shifted. I thought of Kiara, of the weight she carried every day for the lives she'd taken. I thought of Evan Reed, of the way the Piper had changed his path, not by force, but by showing him the cost of his choices. I thought of every story I'd uncovered about those who had been given the chance to turn away from the darkness, and those who hadn't. And I thought of myself. I knew what this choice would mean. If I gave in, I might find peace, but it wouldn't be real. It would be built on blood, on a piece of myself that I would never get back.
No,
I said, my voice barely above a whisper. The leader frowned.
What?
I took a step back, then another, shaking my head.
No, I'm not doing this. I'm not like you. I won't be like you. You're throwing away your only chance, he said, his voice hardening. You'll suffer for the rest of your life. You'll never be free. Maybe, I said, my voice steadier now. But at least I'll still have my soul. I turned and walked away. Surprisingly, he allowed me to leave. As I reached the door, I heard it. The faintest sound, almost imperceptible, carried on the breeze. The soft, haunting melody of pipes. Just for a moment, the weight in my chest loosened, and the shadows didn't feel as heavy. For the first time in days, I felt calm. And then I went home, and I slept. Today begins the rest of my life.
Thank you for listening and delving with me into the dark together.
Please remember to leave a thumbs up and subscribe if you feel so inclined. The more engagement this video gets, the more YouTube will push my content to others.
Thus, the following will grow.
All stories read in this channel will be available on Spotify, iTunes, and just about everywhere else. Links in the description.
Thank you for listening and feeding the cause. We'll be seeing you.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.